What we're gonna do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. Welcome to my neighborhood, the Avenue. I grew up here, and each week I'll be sharing the sounds and stories of the people that made the Avenue great. Welcome back to the Avenue. This is the second episode in our three-part series paying tribute to Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign, one of the most legendary bands in Naptown music. The group formed in the late 1960s and began performing as the Ebony Rhythm Band. The Ebony Rhythm Band played some of their earliest gigs on the Avenue and became the house band for the Indianapolis soul music label Lamp Records. During the early 1970s, they left Naptown for California and released their debut album as the Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign in 1973. Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign achieved their greatest success during the 1970s. They performed with some of the biggest stars in American music, like B.B. King, Earth, Wind & Fire, Isaac Hayes, and Jackie Wilson. And their recordings received serious airplay, even appearing on Billboard's R&B Hot 100 chart. Today, Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign remain a cult favorite with soul music fans around the world. And last year, the group had new releases on labels in London, England, and Tokyo, Japan. Stay tuned for an hour of words and music with three of the band's founding members, Pam Tanner Davis, Ricky Jackson, and Lester Johnson. We'll start this week's show with the title track from the new Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign album, 69 Cents, released by Peabine Records in Tokyo, Japan. This is Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign with 69 Cents, featuring Tony Roberts on lead vocals.
Hey, listen up! Listen up! We're gonna do this song here, name the song 59 Cents. But due to inflation, we had to raise the price. Now this song is named 69 Cents. You see, this song here is about a guy in love with this girl. And he tells this girl now let me tell you now what he tells this girl. He said, baby, your love ain't worth 69 cents.
Ebony Rhythm had their first big break with the Naptown soul music label Lamp Records. They issued their debut single with Lamp and became the label's house band, backing up groups like the Vanguards, the Monteiths, and the Pearls. The Pearls vocalist, Pam Tanner Davis, would later join Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign. Let's hear the Pearls' 1970 single for Lamp Records. This is Shooting High, featuring instrumental backing from the Ebony Rhythm Band. That was the Pearls with Shooting High. That song was released by Lamp Records in 1970 and featured instrumental backing from the Ebony Rhythm Band. WFYI's Kyle Long recently spoke with three of Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign's founding members, vocalist Pam Tanner Davis, keyboardist Ricky Jackson, and bassist Lester Johnson. Let's join their conversation as they discuss Pam's transition from the Pearls to Ebony Rhythm.
One more question about LAMP before we move off this topic. One important influence LAMP had on the group's history is it brought Pam into the mix, right? First, you backed the Pearls on this record, Can I Call You Baby? Mm-hmm. And Pam, you told me it was this East Coast tour that the Pearls did with Ebony Rhythm Band that really cemented your relationship with them. You were on tour singing with the group every night, and you were determined to join this band, right? Tell me about bringing Pam into the group.
I sure was. I said, y'all going to hire me or you won't play another note nowhere else. They didn't want a female vocalist. They didn't want to have nothing to do with a female vocalist, okay? But I just told them, you know, I'm not like other females, okay? I've been hanging out with you guys for years. You guys know me, okay? And y'all need to hire me. I was not gonna stop until they hired me. And at first they just kept saying no. And then finally, and I think Matthew was the holdout.
Oh yeah, he was. He didn't want to, you know, but the final thing just kind of gelled and came on board and we started working on music. And
well, the East Coast tours had some other elements.
Because they had Tony. Because you guys.
Oh, we can't talk about that stuff.
Because you guys had
personal relationships. Or...
Triple X.
Because by then you had Tony.
Yeah.
You had Tony.
We had Tony.
Yeah, by then you had Tony, you know. But I'm thinking, you know, a female up there would just be the right spice to add. And I just was not going to give up, you know, because I had known Tony for years and years and years, since the Sensations, right, you know. Yeah. So it's like we all knew each other. And I think what convinced them was, I think they knew in their hearts that I was not going to get pregnant. I was not, you know, I was not going to go that route, because I think they knew that I had the music in my heart, in my soul, on my mind. I was focused, and that's all that I wanted to do. And I was not going to let nothing stand in my way of doing that, you know. So I just put all the female stuff aside, you know, no marrying and all of that stuff. You know, I just wanted to be with these guys and make music, and that's all I wanted to do. And I think they finally realized that that's where I was coming from, and they gave me the chance.
That's true.
Yeah.
And Pam, this was very different than the music you'd been making with the Pearls, right? Had you had a desire to be in a rock band or a psychedelic band, what was it that, why did you gravitate so heavily towards the group? Why were you so determined?
Because I loved what they were doing. I loved what they were doing. And because I'm a lover of all music, you know, I love all music. And I liked the fact that they were doing other stuff besides classic R&B stuff. I love that about them. And they were so different, you know. And I just had it in my mind that they're going to make it. They're going to make it, you know. I had that much confidence in the band. And I wanted to be there. I wanted to go along for the ride. Yeah.
Anything you guys want to say about what bringing Pam into the band added to the group?
They won't let me tell the whole story.
Musically?
But was it a good addition? Was it a good move?
No, it was definitely a good addition.
Come on.
Some of it, in brief, when we went on the East Coast tour and we backed up the Pearls, and then we had to change our name briefly. You remember Tomorrow's News?
I know. Tomorrow's News?
We call ourselves Tomorrow's News. I don't know exactly why we did that, but we did.
It was a
reason. We called ourselves Tomorrow's News, and we went there. And that was when we had some of the experience with Izzy Arts, the Golden Nugget.
Yeah, it was in
Rochester.
Rochester, New York,
Syracuse, Buffalo, upstate New York. And some of it, too, was, we were all from the same area, the same location. So I'm talking about Denise and and the other members.
Right, and Rebecca.
Rebecca, yeah.
Right, and Rebecca. So some of it, too, so it's kind of like there are similar stories that happened with Motown, when the Miracles and Martha Reeves and the Vandellas and all of them would get on the thing. You actually, there are personal relationships that developed on the road.
Yeah.
Some of it's just it's out of loneliness and wanting to be around people that you, well, I know this person.
We're so familiar that was, with each other, right?
Right. So there was that element, too. We can't talk about that a whole bunch.
There were personal relationships that you don't want to get into.
There were personal relationships between the people in the group, and so that had some elements of it too. I mean, it's borne out with Henry's daughter,
Denise,
and all that. So,
but I think basically they knew that even though I was in this girls' group, I think they knew that there was a difference between me and the other two girls. You know, I think they knew that they really didn't have the wherewithal to make this their career and to sacrifice and do everything that you would probably have to do, you know, to be in a group like with them. I think they knew the difference. I think they knew that my heart was all the way in this. You know, I wasn't just around
just to be hanging out,
you know. Yeah. I think they knew that I really wanted to make music my life's career.
Let's pause and listen to Reach For It from Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign's 1973 self-titled debut. The album was released by Uni Records and produced by Wayne Henderson of the Crusaders. That was Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign with Reach For It, featuring Pam Tanner Davis on lead vocals. Let's return to our conversation with the group as they discuss Pam's role as a lead vocalist.
As a fan of the band, your contributions to that first album, the Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign debut album, it's just so explosive and dynamic, and you really are matching the energy of these, you know, fierce, powerful instrumentalists. What was your approach to singing when you joined this band? Because it was obviously very different than the work you'd done with the Pearls.
Absolutely. Well, I had to start off by telling them, turn that mess down. I had to tell them, turn that mess down. I had to remind them, look, my instrument, I cannot plug into a wall, okay? And once I blow this out, that's it. Ain't no going buying something new. And, you know, but they eventually got the message. And then I had Lester as an ally, you know, because he would tell them, you don't have to blast it, you know, to get the energy. You know, the energy can be there, you know, without playing loud. So we just had to train each other, you know, on how they just had to learn how to play behind vocalists, which they did, no problem, you know. But I love the explosiveness of the music that they played. I loved it. Yeah, wanted to do it all. Whatever kind of music they wanted to play, I was on board. Let's do it, you know, let's do it. Because they were good at it. They were good at it. I remember one time we did an audition for Jerry Wexler.
Mm-hmm. I remember that well.
I don't know if you know that name.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. And we did the audition and everything. We did it at the Whiskey.
Yeah.
We did it at the Whiskey A Go Go.
It was either the Grassroots or the headliners or Three Dog Night.
And some of the members of Chicago were there. And we were, after it was all over, we were talking to them and stuff, you know, and telling, we told, we said, yeah, we play some of you guys' stuff, you know. And they were like, really? We said, yeah. And so they wanted to hear something. And so I forget what song they played, but they blew those guys away, man. You know, after it was over, they were like, oh, wow. Yeah. They said, we've heard our people play our music before, you know, but not like this, because they could just play that stuff, you know. And I love that about them. And so I was just on board. Whatever kind of music they wanted to play, R&B, rock, punk, whatever, I was on board because they were that good. Yeah, they were that good.
Let's pause and listen to another track from Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign's 1973 self-titled debut album.
Can't you tell?
Touch that dial. Echoes of Indiana Avenue will return with more words and music from the Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign after this short break.
Get it all now at Lyric Records with the Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign.
If I close my eyes.
The Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign with a great new album featuring Reach For It.
You say.
The Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign on Uni Records and tapes now at Lyric Records. Lyric Records downtown, 113 North Illinois. At Speedway Shopping Center, at Southern Plaza, at Eastgate, and at Lafayette Square. Lyric Records with five places to get Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. This is the second episode of our three-part series focusing on the legendary Naptown band, Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign. We've been listening to tracks from their 1973 self-titled debut album. Let's hear another. This is Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign with Trying to Be Me. That was Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign with Trying to Be Me. WFYI's Kyle Long recently spoke with Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign's Ham Tanner Davis, Ricky Jackson, and Lester Johnson. Let's return to their conversation.
I did want to ask a couple questions about the group's visual image. And Pam, I want to ask you first.
No.
You had a unique costume with the band at one point. You had a light up gown, an electric
jumpsuit. It was a jumpsuit.
Yeah, tell me about this outfit.
Well, we wanted to do something different and special. That's when we warmed up Earth, Wind, and Fire. And at that time, there was no LED and all of that stuff. So I'm hooked up to I don't know how many volts of electricity.
With a tail hanging out of her back.
With a tail hanging out of my back, plugged in. And I'm going to tell you who made that. Robert Banner. He's still
makes
out
outfits.
There kicking today.
Hamilton Movement, The Upsetters.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He makes outfits for groups, right?
Yeah. Bobby Banner made that outfit for me. He made all the outfits. He made Tony's, too. Huh. And I told him what I wanted to do. And he said, I'm going to hook that up for you. I'm going to hook that up for you. I said, okay, Bobby. And that's what he came up with. I said, are you sure this is not going to kill me up there? Oh, no, you'll be okay.
Stand out with
yeah,
that on.
Yeah, you'll be okay. And so that's what we did, you know, because we just wanted to do something different, you know, something explosive, something eye-catching, you know, for that performance. And so that's how I ended up with that, a Bobby Banner original, lights and all.
Mm-hmm. And I think for us, it was the first time we decided we were going to dress alike.
Yeah.
And so the idea was...
kind of alike, yeah.
Well, I mean, you don't have the same color.
Yeah, yeah.
My wife made my outfit.
Yeah, we all did white.
I had a silver streak down the leg here and so forth. Everybody had their own custom... white.
Yeah.
Custom white suit.
I remember I had on white pants.
Yeah. But that was the first time we actually dressed up
alike.
Kind of alike.
Similar clothes, wearing similar colors. Nobody just all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Lester, Ricky, I wanted to ask about something I find interesting from the early days of the band. You mentioned Matthew Watson being inventive and developing all sorts of visual props for the band.
Mm-hmm.
One thing he did was create a light show for the group, right? A sort of primitive light show. And you took this down to Indiana Avenue with the Blue Eagle and did a psychedelic light show on Indiana Avenue. Tell me about this light show.
They had never seen a strobe light.
Yeah.
We came in there and we had strobe lights that Matthew had put inside of the milk crates.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had these other lights. But we'd also, there was this company up in Benton Harbor, Michigan called Heathkit. And we had a kit you put together, and you hooked it up to your sound system, and the intensity of the memory would make different lights go on. So bass would make blue lights go on, middles would make maybe red, and then real high notes would make the orange. So we had this thing hooked up. It was all homemade, as primitive as you could get.
Yeah.
And we would in these milk crates, and we was prop it up around the stage.
Around the front of the stage.
And then when we would do certain songs like I'm a Man, Spencer Davis Group or something like that, we'd turn on the strobe light. We would do all kind of crazy stuff. We would turn our backs and play to the audience. We would pretend. I don't know what we would do. Whatever the other people did, we wanted to do exactly
the opposite. Mm-hmm.
And you were playing in all kinds of venues, right? You were playing
We were in venues where this was like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
That's what I want to ask you about. Yeah.
Yeah.
You were playing to the hippies at the Middle Earth over by the 20 Grand on 34th and Illinois, right?
We did the same show, though, at Blue Eagle, and they weren't hippies.
That's what I want to ask you about. Like, how did this sound go over on Indiana Avenue? How did this image go over on Indiana Avenue, the psychedelic sound and image?
I'll be honest, I think at first they were just trying to figure out what the heck we were doing.
Mm.
But once they kind of got a feel for it, I think they embraced it. Because they had seen so many so-called show bands that were almost just like a...
all the same.
They're all the same, mm-hmm. that when we came on the scene, we were... I think at first they were kind of taken aback by it, but eventually they embraced it.
It was something so much different visually. Even though we may have cover songs that we played, this visual thing was something that just they wasn't used to seeing.
Well, we played other people's songs. We even knew them different. I'll tell you one that I remember sticks out of my mind. We used to play Ready or Not by the Delphonics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And I used to play the whole intro with a fuzz tone on my bass. I played the whole first, had the whole intro, ding, 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 ding. And I played the whole thing, fuzz tone bass. And then we would go into really a pretty much traditional arrangement. Mm-hmm. So we would take other people's stuff, and then we would just
make it our own.
We would use using a fuzz tone or a wah pedal. The other groups, they didn't know anything about them. We were trying to find every little fuzz box or whatever. We would experiment.
I think the bottom line was that they embraced it because the music was good. I think that's really what did it. You know, once they got past all of the light, all the other stuff.
Because
they dressed different and everything. Well, I think once they got past that, you know, they was like, but they can play though. You know, they look crazy and they act crazy, but they can play. Yeah. And I think that's what did it. That's what caused the people to embrace it, was because the music was good. No matter what else was going on that stage, they were playing good music.
We were a very tight band.
Yeah.
We could read playing each other without even saying good a word. Music.
Yep.
Let's pause and listen to another track from Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign's 1973 self-titled debut album. This is If I Close My Eyes, featuring Tony Roberts on vocals.
If I close my eyes, I could see her under windswept skies. I could see her if I close my eyes, I could be there.
That was Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign with If I Close My Eyes. Let's return to our conversation with the group as they discuss how their close relationships off stage influenced the band's chemistry on stage.
We could just feel the vibe from each other.
Yep.
And we could be playing a song and just take it off another area somewhere else.
Yeah.
Fluidly.
Yeah, after a while, playing many years with Matthew and Ricky and Booby, we had we could communicate with really without having to say a whole lot.
Yeah.
Because we could feel a sense when other people were going to do something different. There were some cues, visual cues, you might remember.
Yeah.
Remember when Matthew would take his cat and
turn it around backwards.
Now, if he did that,
that
was like the Masonic sign for
get ready.
Recharging.
Here we go.
Turn the hat around backwards, man.
Yes.
That meant he was getting ready to go somewhere else.
We was going on.
It was going to be crazy at that. We knew that.
It's crazy now. Yeah. Yeah, but we did. We read each other. I remember Matthew told me one time he said, I forget what song it was. He said, the way I get the tempo on this song, he said, all I have to do is watch your behind, because I'd be going. He said, and I got the tempo. Got it right on the money. But that comes from playing together with each other year after year after year after year, and just learning each other and knowing each other. And you can get it like that.
Living together, sleeping together.
Yep, eating, sleeping together.
That's the thing that people know about our band that was different, too. And a lot of people, we don't talk about it a great deal, but actually we lived communally for a long time. Mm-hmm. So this wasn't like we were in a band and then we would go off into different places and stuff. We were all in the same place all the time.
Like a family.
Right. Even our girlfriends. At one point later, and it started getting tough. Then when children started being born, then it got a bit more difficult. But we were communal. So one of the ways we survived was really through pooling our resources.
Right.
And we would live in one house, and we would go buy groceries with so much of the gig money, remember?
Right.
And we paid the rent with the other part. And then whatever was left over after all this is done, that was your money.
That was your allowance for the week.
That was your whatever you had for the week.
Yeah.
After the lodging, whatever, we had the house. And the food. And the food was usually pretty basic.
Yeah.
But it was good. I mean, we ate regular food, but it was pretty basic.
Mm-hmm.
The only luxury item I can remember having was Kool-Aid. Now, you can think about this. We had, everybody had these big jars.
But it was a luxury item at the time.
We would make these big jars, like gallon jug jars of Kool-Aid. And we would go to the gig. So when we came home, we would have this ice cold Kool-Aid, ice cold, and we'd be looking for that. And we'd get back to the house, and jugs would be way down here. Who drank the Kool-Aid? I'm still trying to figure that out.
But our survival depended on each other for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, our real survival, our life survival, depended on one another. You know, so, yeah, it was either love them or leave them, because, you know, so you had to love them.
We've been listening to our recent interview with Pam Tanner Davis, Ricky Jackson, and Lester Johnson of the legendary Neptown band Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign. Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign released their biggest record in 1975. Their single, How's Your Wife and My Child, hit the Billboard R&B Hot 100 in March of that year. We'll hear that track next, followed by the single's B-side, Old Baby.
How's your wife, your wife? And my child, oh yeah. Are you treating them well? Tell me about my child. But now I've changed my mind. There ain't no mountain I would climb. And no sea I would swim for you. You once were mine, but now we're through. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, oh.
That was Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign with Old Baby. Tune in next week for the final episode of our three-part tribute to the Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign. We'll end this week's show with a track from Ebony Rhythm's 1976 album, Watching You, Watching Me. This is Syncopated Madness. That's all the time we have for this week. Thank you for joining us for this tribute to the Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign. You can meet me here on the Avenue again next week, same time, same place. And you can find the Echoes of Indiana Avenue podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcast. Echoes of Indiana Avenue is written and produced by Kyle Long, and hosted and co-produced by me, Herman Butch Slaughter.
Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. Do. Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. If you will stop and listen, I will tell you a thing or two. Two. When you get lonesome and want to have some fun.